initially, that's why I started the newsletter, was to have people curate lists for me that were outside of my comfort zone, which at the time were 99% Invisible, The Memory Palace, This American Life, those podcasts that definitely have a feel to them, And I wish there was a way to help people find audio and stories and books and all types of media that would expose them to new things. And I think that that would go a really long way.
Hey, it's Danny here from PodChat. Just a quick note about this week's episode. During recording, there was a small technical snafu which impacted the sound quality of this episode. Hopefully it doesn't impact your enjoyment of the episode, and normal service will be resumed in the next one. Thank you.
Today, I'm delighted to welcome Ariel Nissen-Black to the show. Ariel is a hugely popular and respected part of the podcasting space and has quite an impressive background to go with it. She's the founder of the Earbuds Collective publication and podcast, community manager at remote recording platform Squadcast, part of the podcast taxonomy team, and co-host of leading industry publication and podcast, Sounds Profitable, and some other things on top of that as well. We'll be chatting about that and more in this episode. So without further ado, the person who puts the unity in community, Ariel Nissen-Black. Welcome to the show.
Wow, that's such a nice thing to say. Thank you for having me.
I was trying to think of a nice introduction just to like tie, and I try to tie in everybody's introduction to them as a person from what I see. And I just felt unity in community, that's got to be Ariel.
Beautiful. I love it.
You're welcome. You have to put that in your profile bio now. So first of all, though, congrats. 5 years of Earbuds Collective just passed. Did you envision that milestone when you first started it?
I am a stick-to-it kind of person, so I do not see an exit ramp, so we will be celebrating 100 years.
I don't know if I'll be around to celebrate that, but I'll give you a pre-celebration cake, slice of cake for that.
Very good.
What I like about Earbuds as well, it takes a pretty interesting approach where it not only asks readers to create their own list of 5 recommended podcasts, but also in specific genres and topics and niches. And I'm wondering, I really find that a real interesting approach. It brings some really cool podcasts to the fore and topics around that. But I'm wondering, is there anything that's ever been suggested but you've had to turn down for whatever reason?
Yes, definitely. Well, I'll tell this story. When I first started the newsletter, which was in 2017, I didn't really have a process for vetting submissions. And the way that submissions worked is that people would sign up to curate a list and they would leave me their name, their email address, and then a general idea of the podcast that they wanted to recommend. And then about 2 weeks before their week of curation, I would email them and I would say, your week of curation is coming up. Here is a list of questions for you to answer. Please get it back to me on this date. You're probably thinking that is incredibly inefficient. I have learned since, and it's a much better process now. But that also didn't give me a lot of time if they either didn't get back to me or got back to me with a list that was not okay to post. I would have to scramble to find other people to curate. Early on, I want to say 2 months after I started the newsletter, I had somebody curate a list called Mancasts, podcasts by men for men. And I published it because I didn't really have another choice. And I want to blame it on me being young, but I wasn't that young. I was like 24. I should have known better. Published the list. It was not something that I'm proud of now. It's not something that I would do again. So after that, I decided I needed to have some programs in place, some stops that if I needed to make sure that if something like that were to happen again, I could point to something on my website that said, we don't, you know, make lists like this, or ultimately I have editorial control over what I put out because it is being associated with my name. A few years later in 2018, somebody submitted a list called Best Interview Podcasts, and it was 5 podcasts of men interviewing men, which is now something on Twitter that I talk about a lot, which is if you're making a list calling something the best, please, please include women, include people of color, include non-binary folks, gender non-conforming folks. It cannot be that the best of something is all white men. It's just not true. It's just not a thing. So make sure that your list is representative of the people who are going to be consuming that list. I published that list, though, and it's, again, because I did not have programs in place to make sure that things like that wouldn't happen or that I didn't have a backup. And I knew almost immediately that I would get pushback. And I did. I received an email about 30 seconds later that was like, surely there should be some women on this list. And I was like, I completely agree, but I messed up. So from then on, I added something to the submission form that says 3 out of 5 of the podcasts need to either feature or be hosted by or be produced by. I forget what the exact wording is. People who are traditionally underrepresented in podcasting or in media. I did get somebody unsubscribing last week saying that was racist of me. And I was like, okay, thank you. Yeah.
You can't please everyone. It's like to your point, and I'd like to revisit that further in the episode as well, because it's a great point about where the industry is at the moment as well. But it's like the list that is doing Twitter at the moment. Like, there's just been the 20 best rock vocalists, I think, that's being published by whatever publication it is. And they're all white men. Oh. And it's just, it's creating quite the conversation, obviously. But yeah, knowing your focus on Twitter and some of the conversations over there, I can imagine what a man cast about men podcast and an interview, what kind of reaction I would get to.
I think it featured Joe Rogan. You know, and now I'm pretty sure I don't have it written anywhere, but I won't put an episode of Joe Rogan on my newsletter. Yeah. I just won't. And look, this is not to say that men don't make great podcasts. Danny, you make a great podcast. I'm excited to be on it. You're a white man, I think. You let me know otherwise. But it's just not representative of the larger listening population. So we need to go out of our way to include voices that do not reflect exactly who we are. And that's just the challenge that we have.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. It seems to be getting picked up more, which is good, and especially by white men, which obviously, you know, needs to be done more for sure. Now, as I said in the intro, and I was using it as play on words, but there is truth to it. I mentioned that you put the unity in community, as anyone that follows you on Twitter or online, for example, can see. You have a very distinct knack for fostering engagement and conversation and support. Your support for yourself and support for the communities that you're trying to give the voice to and share more, you know, voices of. So I'm curious, has this always been natural to you, or is this something you've had to foster over the years?
Thankfully, it's been natural. I pretty naturally come up with prompts to share on Twitter, prompts to share all over social media that seem to bring people together, seem to answer questions. And it has been pretty easy for me to do that. And I want to say I'm lucky. It's pretty cool. I saw a tweet a few months ago that said it's pushing back against the idea that community leaders, community managers should naturally be good at bringing community together, because I agree with that. I happen to be good at it naturally, and it is my full-time job as the community manager at Squadcast, but it is also definitely something that folks can learn. Just because it doesn't come naturally to you doesn't mean that you can't follow people who do a great job at it and learn this skill set yourself. I also took a class through On Deck, which is a global network of community-based cohorts for learning things. So I learned some concrete skills that come with the community management profession, such as Slack management and using no-code tools to re-engage people and things like that. So I think I come to community management and community building with a nice cross-section of what comes naturally to me as a community builder, and then what I have learned and continue to learn from the school of life. I also feel like I should mention that growing up, my life was definitely very community oriented. I grew up in a relatively, I don't want to say observant household Jewish wise, but we celebrated Shabbat dinner almost every Friday night with either just my family or with other families around the neighborhood. And it was always fun, and it was always natural to come together and sing songs and have fun. And the kids would go and play when the parents would continue to sit around the table. And I think that has inspired me to want to be around community and to create in-person community spaces for myself. As an adult, I love hosting dinners. I love creating off the beaten path adventures in person with my friends and with strangers as well. So I think it extends to all aspects of me.
And you mentioned there that sort of caught my interest was you say that community, obviously it takes a certain person to really grow and nurture and look after a community and make sure it's welcoming to all. And obviously community can be a challenge with a lot of different viewpoints coming into the fore, you know, from different people, different beliefs, etc. And I'm curious, what's been some of the best and the worst examples you've seen in the podcasting community in general? without necessarily, you know, naming names or whatever.
I won't name names. I'll start with the worst so I can end on a positive note. Some not so stellar examples of the fostering of community are when people just don't know how to utilize the community. So in theory, the podcast community, however you take that term, can help you and you can help the podcast community. You as a podcaster, you as a podcast listener, you as a podcast person. You can bring in your expertise and share that with others. You can bring in your questions and get those answered by others. But I think where there is a little bit of an issue is when people find out that there are communities of podcasters hanging out on Facebook, hanging out on Instagram, hanging out on Twitter, Discord, Slack, and then they go in there and then they just post links to their podcast without any regard for what is going on in that community. So they're not actually sharing value. They are just spamming links. And that does not do anything for anybody. It doesn't do anything for you as the person who is spamming the links. Nobody wants to read a link that has, nobody wants to click on a link that doesn't have an explanation attached to it, or you are not familiar in these people's minds. And then nobody within that group is going to actually consume your podcast just because you drop a link. So I think that is an example of when community is utilized in the wrong way. I've also seen people just be straight up mean to each other on the internet, and there's no reason for that. But it makes sense. We really are quick to judge based on words. And that's why I think in-person events, based on written words, and that's why I think in-person events are so important, because we're going to put faces to names for the first time at Podcast Movement in 2 years, 1.5 years or so. Although there was Podcast Movement in August, but this really feels like more and more people are going to be at this coming event, which is in a few weeks from now, from when we're recording in Los Angeles. Are you going, by the way?
We're not actually, no. We were hoping to be there this year, but we're probably in the one in May or June. There's one coming up.
Dallas.
Dallas. That's what we're going to think.
Okay, very nice. Yeah. So I'm just excited for folks who, you know, may see each other's personalities on Twitter or on Facebook and say, oh, I don't like that person, or I don't understand that person. What are they always posting about? And then we can actually meet them and understand that we're actually all people. And sometimes our in-person personalities don't match our internet personalities. And that's why I think we need in-person get-togethers, or at least synchronous get-togethers.
And it's a little bit less brave if you're not hiding behind a keyboard, just, you know, throwing stuff off into the nether, for sure.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to getting back to in-person events. It's like just a different dynamic altogether, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Now, you're the community manager for Squadcast, which is a remote recording platform. And you're very community-driven with Squadcast. You have the newsletter, you have the sort of special events, etc. You just had that big month-long giveaway that was awesome to watch that happen, and people getting real involved with that. And clearly, you get a lot of great feedback from the users of Squadcast as well. So I'm curious if there's any really cool features that became a Squadcast feature because of the community interaction and feedback, etc.
I have an answer for you on that, but I realized that I left it on a negative note before.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I didn't say the best thing about community. No, not at all. I am also a podcast host, so I understand bringing it back full circle. We're all learning here. The best example of community that I have seen, or, you know, I'll share one of the best examples, because there are great examples of internet community for the podcast space all the time. I really love, I want to give like a specific shout out, but I'm thinking about who or what account. I'm going to shout out Albin Brook from Buzzsprout. Is that okay? Because I know you're a competitor.
No, we're all open.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to shout out Albin, who does a really great job. Albin Brook at Buzzsprout does a really great job crowdsourcing questions via Twitter that the average independent podcaster has, and then producing videos or Twitter threads that are incredibly helpful for those people. And the videos are high quality, they answer the questions, and then you can see reflected in the responses to those videos and to those Twitter threads that questions were answered and people were helped. And I think he's a shining example to me of somebody who genuinely sees an issue or sees a question that is lingering, wants to answer that question for no reason other than wanting to answer that question, not for ego, not for growing his own Twitter following, not for growing Buzzsprout per se, but really getting those answers answered, really getting those questions answered for independent podcasters. And I think that that's so great. And whenever somebody asks me, how do I get more plugged into the podcast space? I think Twitter is such a gold mine of information. I think newsletters are great. You should be subscribed to all the podcast newsletters out there. And also Twitter to me is like LinkedIn, but for podcasters. That I think there's such a great community of podcasters who are hanging out on Twitter and asking questions and answering questions.
If you enjoy podcasts about podcasts, then check out Trailer Park Podcast that focuses on the art of the audio teaser. Hosted by Ariel Nissenblad and Tim Viegas, Season 1 consists of 8 episodes featuring trailers from very different podcasts. Listen to Trailer Park Podcast to be entertained, to find a new show, or to learn what makes a great trailer. With a chance to win a Vocaster from Focusrite for every episode of Season 1, tune in and find out how to win. To listen to the show, head on over to podchat.ca/trailerpark or follow on Instagram at trailerpark_podcast. Podchat is sponsored by Podnews. Get a daily email with all the latest news about podcasting. It's free at podnews.net. From jobs across the industry to events and conferences, you'll find the latest podcasting info in the daily newsletter. You can add podnews.net to your daily briefing on your smart speaker too. Just search for it in your smart speaker app. And now, back to this week's episode.
And you've obviously got the community feature now on Twitter. I know you run one yourself. You actually run that with, I think, is it?
I do, yeah. So Twitter, I want to say in December or so, released communities in beta. And what they mean by that is you can tweet to a specific group of people who are in a community. So right now, the community that I run is called Podcasting Twitter. And it has a couple hundred people in it, and I can go in there and post a question specific to podcasting, and people who are in podcasting Twitter will see it and respond to it. It could be questions, it can be, you know, comments, it can be welcome to the group, introduce yourself. We're really trying to figure out how to use it because it is new and has some issues, but I think ultimately it is fun so far.
No, I'm part of it. I can attest to that for sure. And it's part of what you mentioned there, like Twitter's like LinkedIn for podcasting. I always say that the podcasting community is one of the best around when it comes to your point about Alvin. No egos, genuinely want to help people. And you get a few bad eggs, you know, a few old schoolers maybe that might want to hold on to some power trips that they might be on. But for the most part, I think overall, the podcasting community, there's no competition. Everybody genuinely wants to help each other, which is, it's awesome.
Yeah, and I hope that doesn't change. And look, I'm sure if you talk to some people, they will say, oh, it's vicious out there. People are so competitive. But I think for the most part, people subscribe to a rising tide lifts all boats. I think that's the phrase. And that's definitely how I like to view the podcast space.
Now, you're the community manager for Squadcast. And obviously, it's a very interactive community. I know that you've got the Squadcast newsletter. You've got is it Squaddies you call them, I think? The nickname for the Squadcasters?
Squad Pods.
Squad Podders. And you had a great giveaway recently, a couple of months back, I think, where you ran a month-long event where, you know, people could show how they use Squadcast and all sorts of cool stuff. And it's very clearly a platform that listens to its community and builds, you know, products for that. So I'm curious, has there been anything that's come from the Squadcast community that Squadcast has then gone and developed as a product that I'd never been discussed up until that point?
Yes, a few things come to mind. The first and the most obvious one is video recording. When Zach and Rock started Squadcast in 2015, 2016, they thought it was for podcasters and podcasters don't need to record video. So for the first 3.5-4 years of Squadcast's existence, you could look at each other on the screen and communicate using verbal cues, but the video was not recordable. But a few years in, we started hearing, and I wasn't working for Squadcast yet, they started hearing that there was a desire to record video, whether that was to upload the entire thing onto YouTube or to create snippets for social media purposes. People were starting to want to record video for their podcasts. And still there was some resistance. Zach and Rock were like, okay, but the real podcasters, they don't want to record video, right? And that persisted for a bit. And then we ultimately decided, based on community feedback, which was persistent, thank you all, community, that it was time to make video recording available. And that came with its challenges as well, because I know you work for a software company, but I don't know the intricate back details of what it takes to make something work like that. But I can tell you that it is more complicated than I initially thought. And I learned a lot just being around it and being in the Slack channel and hearing about it every day, about the challenges that would come up and the solutions that would come up and the creative wayfinding to make sure that we could get this product out to the people in a way that made sense and in a way that was going to be really effective for them as creators. So it was a lot of asking questions of our Slack channel. You know, if we have video recording available, what should the price be? Should it be double? Should it be some other sort of incremental increase? We didn't know exactly. And so these were all questions that we were openly having discussions about on our Slack channel and through our beta communities. That's one example. The other one is something much more simpler. It sounds simple, but I can tell you the back end is not simple. Whenever you're in a Squadcast session, I encourage you to take what's called a squad shot, what we've decided to call a squad shot, which is just you recording, you press the command shift 4 or control shift 4 or whatever it is on your computer to take a screenshot of your session so that you can post it. And when you post it and you tag us, we will promote you. We have a page, squadcast.fm/share, where you can submit your squad shots, you can submit a testimonial, you can submit your most recent episode, you can submit a pre-roll for your podcast, and we will share it to the world. And that was also something that came from the community. We said, you know, what are you lacking in your podcast experience? You know, you have the production, you have the community that you're reaching with your show, but like, how can we help was our question. And overwhelmingly, the answer was, how do we grow our show? And so my job as the community manager, and this is pretty standard across the board, everybody, you know, has a show in mind. Some people are really great at making that show sound great. Some people need a little help on the technical side and also on the production side of things. But everybody wants to reach an audience, and people are struggling with that. And my job as a community manager, from what the community has told me, is to help them figure out a way to grow their show beyond just their friends and family who are maybe already listening.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we came up with was making squad shots clickable right on the screen. So rather than pressing command shift 4, you can just press a button and you can tell your people to smile, and then they'll smile, and then you have an automatic share button to squadcast.fm/share and to the social media world. And that is coming in V5 of Squadcast. And yeah, we're very open to suggestions from the community. And I think that's a very big part of it, is just being extremely transparent about what we can and what we cannot do with our team, with the size of our team, which is much smaller than some of the other remote recording platforms' team sizes. So we're working really hard because we just think creators are great, and because we're creators ourselves. So we know what you need.
And I think there's multiple benefits to that. Obviously, you're highlighting the creators, so it helps them grow because they're going in front of a trusted audience. It's not just someone that's put up a Google ad or whatever. It's Squadcast who are in the space and who are building, you know, products for platform for podcasters. And it also shows me as a podcaster, for example, hey, that's a really cool effect, a really cool result that podcaster got. I'm going to reach out and ask him or her how they did that. So it's connecting people as well that way. So it's like, it just seems win-win all around. You know, it's just pretty cool approach.
Thank you.
Now, one of the other things I'd mentioned at the start when I was introducing you, Ariel, is podcast taxonomy. You're part of that team, which I love as a creator myself, and knowing what goes into the production of a show. The podcast taxonomy is a really cool initiative. So for anybody that doesn't know what this is, what is that and how did that come about?
Yeah. Podcast taxonomy, let's see if I can get this right, is an international multidisciplinary attempt to standardize roles and credits in the podcast space. And it came about because I'm sure at some point you have said, what does a producer actually do? What does a podcast producer actually do? And I first started experiencing this in 2017. After I started my newsletter, I wanted to do whatever it took to work in the podcast space. And I was living in LA at the time. And I was running this newsletter and I just wanted to be paid to do something in podcasting. And my newsletter was not monetized yet. So I had a stroke of, I had an idea. And I emailed a bunch of different co-working spaces around LA. And I essentially pitched myself as the podcast librarian for these co-working spaces. I said, like, can I come in and run podcast book, podcast like discussions once a month or something like that? And one place in particular got back to me and they were like, we don't want that per se, but can you build us a studio? And I just kind of pretended that I knew what I was doing. And I built a studio and then I ran the studio and I filled it with customers and I filled it with engineers and all that. And once we got customers, a lot of those customers at the time, this is 2018, they had heard the word podcast, but they didn't necessarily know what it meant to have a podcast and how to promote that podcast and how to even make that podcast. And so I found myself in a producer role, but without really knowing what a producer did. And so I thought that that was just a symptom of I'm new here and I finagled my way into this role where I'm a studio manager, but have no idea what I was doing. But it turns out across the industry, that question was being asked. And it's not just from people who don't know what they're doing. People who even do know what they're doing sometimes can't define these terms because they are so amorphous. And they might mean one thing at one studio and one thing in another studio. So the goal of podcast taxonomy is to put descriptions to these terms so that we can also figure out what those titles should be paid and what should a standard scale of pay be across the board. And how do we make sure that women are being paid the same as men and that there's not any gender pay gaps there and also racial pay gaps. So these are all things that podcast taxonomy hopes to eventually address. What that means now is there is an ongoing living, breathing document, a white paper that you can find at podcasttaxonomy.com. We also have a Slack channel where if you have a question or a comment about something in the white paper, you can say, I don't agree with this. We're also thinking about what it means for British English and American English, and then eventually translating it to other languages and even Australian English, all the Englishes. So there's a lot going on with podcast taxonomy. We have a monthly newsletter where we highlight somebody occupying a role that is described in podcast taxonomy and show that role in action through that person. It's really fun. Yeah. So technically, I'm the community manager of that. So I run the Slack channel. I do the newsletter, all the things, just try to keep up with it all.
And looking at the partner page of the podcast taxonomy website, there's a lot of big names there, like big companies, big podcasting companies, like founders, et cetera. It's a very, very strong, if that was like your council, for example, that's a strong board of directors even. And I'm curious, how did you manage to, what was the process of getting them involved? Was it just the connections you made over the years or did you reach out or how did that go?
Yeah, I am very lucky to be working on podcast taxonomy with Cole Raven from Podchaser, who has a lot of connections with these people. One of the other co-founders is Daniel Rosenberg, who at the time worked for a company called Staff Me Up, which is mostly working on staffing positions in film and TV. However, a lot of people started reaching out to him and saying, I want to staff a podcast. And he would say, okay, I don't really know what I'm doing, but my friend Ariel does. And Daniel actually worked at the co-working space that I was the studio manager at, and we became friends that way. So it's really all about making friends with people, being very open and shaking hands. And I just, when I first started being a quote unquote professional, I was like, I will never shake hands. I will never be, you know, buttoned up at a professional conference and whatever. And then when I started to have to, you know, be professional and buttoned up at a conference, I felt so awkward and I would hate myself after. And then I love it.
Yeah, but you don't have to shake hands now.
That's true. I love being like a cheesy networker. Can we grab coffee? Can we chat about this? I love it. I love meeting people.
Now, what I do love about the goal, and you mentioned it yourself, is to be as inclusive as possible. So, you know, it represents people of all backgrounds, people of color, women podcasters, marginalized voices. And you sort of alluded to it at the beginning of the episode about how that's going at the moment and what percentage of women are represented and marginalized. How do you think the industry is doing, where it stands now, and where you hope it's heading? Is it doing enough?
I think we can always do better. Everybody can always do better. It's Women's History Month right now, and so there are a lot of really great, in the U.S., it's Women's History Month right now, maybe worldwide, I'm not sure. No, I think it's international. It is International Women's History Month. No, It was International Women's Day earlier this month. And in the US, at least, it is Women's History Month, the month of March. And because of that, the podcast space is definitely seeing a lot of initiatives pop up that are pro women, pro non-binary folks, pro people who are not white men, usually. And one of them that stands out right now is Libsyn. Elsie Escobar in particular started an initiative called Claim Pod Parity, which is essentially women should take up as much of the room as men have for so long. And again, you know, none of this is meant to be offensive. It is just meant to say that these lists that are created that suggest that the 15 best podcasts about finance are by men, that is not okay. Because women and people who don't identify as men need to have role models that are not just men. And I just encourage, if you see a list that is featuring all men, all white men in particular, at least think critically about that list. Think about saying something about that list, because not only might it be offensive for you, but it also offensive to a point that people don't even understand if they're consuming it and not even able to voice what's wrong with it, because maybe you don't know what's missing. Maybe you don't know. Maybe you're not being exposed to somebody who you would be exposed to otherwise, who really could speak to you. So, I mean, just there are so many financial experts, so many investing experts who are women, who are podcasters, who are sharing their messages and whose platforms are not being amped up and raised up. And so hopefully Claim Pod Parity will help raise up those platforms and open up those doors to more and more people, podcasters, but also listeners. So that's one cool thing that's going on. There's a lot of really great initiatives going on right now, but I think ultimately the work is not over. And March 8th was International Women's Day, and a lot of people were posting about women. And then the next week, not as many people were posting about women, and it just fades from there. So when in doubt, raise up a woman.
Well, it's like I always look at people that say, when something really bad happens, well, what if that was your daughter? And you think, well, but why did it have to be someone's daughter for you to care or to take action? And to your point, I think it's great that there's noise, initial noise, on a certain day or a certain week or month, for example, but then it has to continue for the other 11 months of the year, or 364 days of the year, for example. Now, we know that yourself and Brian Barletta over at Sounds Profitable, you're doing a two-part mini-series at the moment, which is awesome, which has been really insightful around women in podcasting. So was this brought about by discussions with Elsie and what Elsie is doing, for example? Was it planned ahead? How did that come about?
Are you referring to the two articles that have come out?
Yeah.
Sounds Profitable?
Yeah.
Okay. So Brian and I co-host the Sounds Profitable podcast, Ad Tech Applied. There are a few podcasts in the Sounds Profitable ecosystem. We co-host Ad Tech Applied. There are a few other podcasts. I am actually not part of the writing team for Sounds Profitable. I contribute a podcast recommendation each week to the newsletter, and then I run the social media. But the articles were actually an idea of Kayla Littman and Shreya Sharma. So they worked with Brian and Ebo and a few other people on the Sounds Profitable team to come up with the idea for the international, for Women's History Month articles at Sounds Profitable. The first one came out March 8th, and it was quotes from women and gender nonconforming folks from around the industry, or non-binary folks from around the industry, their thoughts on gatekeeping and quote unquote girl bossing in the industry. So big thing is making sure that if you have information about somebody or about something, making that open and available to everybody so that you are not the one benefiting from your knowledge, but everybody can benefit from your knowledge. So really, really great, great quotes from some amazing people in the podcast industry there. I definitely recommend checking it out. And then the article that came out today was all about statistics for women listeners, for female listeners around the world. So really great, and definitely something that you as a reader can take and apply to your own podcast production schedule. Maybe that means having more female guests because there are more female listeners. And one of the stats was that people like to listen to people who sound like them. So really applicable stats in there.
So obviously, as we mentioned, there's a lot that the industry still needs to do to lift up, you know, underrepresented voices and be better at diversity and inclusiveness. So what's the one single thing, if you had like the magic ball or the single power that you could make a change, that one single change would make it all different, what would that be, and how could industry be better tomorrow onwards?
People need to make an effort. Everybody needs to make an effort to listen to voices, to read voices, to consume the stories of people who are not like them. And luckily for the podcast world, if you're a creator, you probably also listen to a lot of shows. And there are a lot of shows out there that are different from your show. I wish there was a way, and maybe this is what I would do, I wish there was a way to make people listen to podcasts that are outside of their comfort zone. And that's why I started Earbuds, actually. It was because right when Trump was being elected in the US, it was like October of 2016, and we weren't sure yet what was going to happen, but it was not looking good. And we were hearing a lot about how we're trapped in these bubbles, and how if you live on the East Coast and you're a liberal, you're probably only listening to liberal media. You're not being exposed to other viewpoints, and definitely has some resonance and some truth to it. And so I thought, okay, if I could start a newsletter where each week we commit to listening to podcasts outside of our comfort zone, I'm not saying we're going to listen to right-wing talk radio, but if I'm not naturally into science podcasts, but you tell me about an amazing science podcast that is digestible for me, I'm going to listen to that and my brain is going to expand. So if I can gamify that in a way, if I can kind of, I think at the time I had aspirations of people signing a pledge, essentially, of saying like, I will listen to these podcasts that are outside of my comfort zone. I will commit to listening to these podcasts each week. Obviously, you can't require anybody to do that. But I think initially that's why I started the newsletter, was to have people curate lists for me that were outside of my comfort zone, which at the time were 99% Invisible, The Memory Palace, This American Life, those podcasts that definitely have a feel to them, And I wish there was a way to help people find audio and stories and books and all types of media that would expose them to new things. And I think that that would go a really long way.
I'm wondering if podcast apps might come into play. I was speaking to AJ from Apollo, and one of their filters, or some of the search filters and parameters they have in place on the app, is to have fiction podcasts that are only created by people of color or by women, you know, on business. And they've got all these filters, and then you break down interest based on your demographics, where you live, etc. And I'm wondering if apps, maybe with some of the podcasting 2.0 tags, could lead some of that field.
I think that that's a great idea. I would love for there to be a way for podcast technology to make my dreams easier. So yes, I am all for it.
I'll have to call AJ back up and ask if we can do that. So Ariel, I've really enjoyed your smarts today and chatting with you. I could chat a lot longer, but the show's got a limited time frame. But I really enjoyed it. So for anybody that wishes to know more about the Earbuds Collective, about Podcast Taxonomy, about Squadcast, about The Sounds Profitable, anywhere that you're connected online, where's the best place for them to find and connect with you?
You should Google my name. It is Ariel Nissenblatt. And I, as far as I know, am the only one. I say this on every podcast because I would really like to find another Ariel Nissenblatt. So prove me wrong. But until then, you can find me by searching for my name, and then you'll find all my social handles. I have pretty good SEO for my name.
And that's a challenge that I need to find someone, that I need to find another Ariel Nissenblatt. It's just too, you know.
I don't think there is one, unfortunately. I would love to meet my name twin, but Nissenblatt is a pretty unique last name, which is cool.
It's as you mentioned, it's a very easy one to own in a search engine. That's awesome. So again, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Did you know every time Podchat gets a new review, a baby podcaster takes the first steps? Help a baby podcaster walk today by leaving a 5-star rating or review on the likes of Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Just head on over to podchat.ca/review and do your magic. These little feet are counting on you.